Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hey everybody, welcome to today's edition of the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the rhapsodic Annie Fulkerson.
Yes, I am. I am rhapsodic. I know what that means. What? I know the adjective of the week this week.
Why? Oh, man. It means a hashtag epic failure.
I think you've used just about all of the really, really difficult adjectives.
I do, man. I scour for like difficult adjectives and each week it's getting harder and harder.
Well, yeah, but I do know what rhapsodic means. It means overly enthusiastic.
Nice.
Exceptionally enthusiastic.
Well, then we got you on that one. Yeah, see, I look at this list of 100 exquisite adjectives. And now that we're on our 50th episode, I've used about half the list and the other half is
things. And I'm starting to know them.
And the other half is things that if I called you, you'd be very upset at me.
Oh. Well, does that mean I know I've known about half of them, so I'm only 50% smart.
Well, I got to tell you, I can't even do the math that you did in your head. So hashtag epic failure.
Well, happy 1 year anniversary of the Salt and Light Podcast.
It is. It was a year ago that we kicked this thing off and we kicked it off, literally kicking it off old school as we didn't have a microphone. We sat outside on our patio recording and it was so loud that we had to go inside because the crickets were overpowering our voice.
Yeah, we just sat outside using the computer microphone and no equipment. Didn't really have any idea what we're doing. Maybe we still don't have an idea what we're doing.
Oh, we still have no clue what we're doing. I mean, there is no doubt. We are, somebody said one time, they're like, well, we'll leave this to the professionals. I'm like, slow down, slow down.
Yeah, but we've had quite a year. Yeah. There's been really some great guests on the show. One of them, just episode 6 and 7, it was a two-parter. We interviewed Michael and Veronica Henderson and their kids, and they are Catholic missionaries. And that was when we started to get equipment.
Right.
We had one microphone.
One mic.
For the four of us. In,
move it back and forth.
That's right. We were pretty comfortable that day. We got to know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
And every time we moved the mic, you'd hear clunk, clunk.
Yeah,
because so if you've listened to episode 6, that was it.
I forget when it was. Like we had a real one of our friends, Chris, is a sound engineer, and he's good. Like he knows his stuff.
And, oh yeah,
and he heard us at home, and he's like, "Well, I can tell you exactly what you need to fix. Like, you want to come over and have some bourbon and fix it?"
yeah, we will pay you in beer and bourbon.
Right,
and he was so gracious. He's come over a couple times to adjust our levels
to make sure that we're normal.
Yeah.
So, well, we have a special episode today. It's our 50th episode, and so we thought we would do something kind of cool, and I think that it'd be great for you to kind of lead in.
Yeah, you are going to listen to an interview that we did this morning with Bishop Robert Barron. And Bishop Barron, he was a priest from Chicago.
Right.
Chicago-born priest, and now is the auxiliary bishop of Los Angeles. He is the founder of the Word on Fire ministry.
Right.
And you should go on and definitely go on wordonfire.org to learn about him.
We were going to read his bio, but then we realized we'd be out of time. He's done so many things, and he's helped bring so many people to the faith. And, you know, he's out there really just leading the charge from an evangelization standpoint, using the technology that's available to us.
That's right. He is. And there is literally, not figuratively, there is literally no one alive that I admire more and wanted to interview more than Bishop Barron. So we were able to Skype with him this morning, and you're going to be able to listen to his interview and his wise words. And but the relationship I have with Bishop Barron and his work goes back a really long way. And we're going to talk a lot about the statistics of people that have left the faith. And I was one of those statistics. In my 20s, I sort of fell away from the church. I suppose enamored with, you know, I had my faith all the way through college. And even when I was at the Naval Academy, went on a pilgrimage to Medjugorje and with a bunch of other midshipmen and a captain who led it, and a Navy captain, that is. And then when I left college, after college, I was working as an engineer, and I guess was just swept up in career and not quite sure exactly what happened. It would probably take too long in this intro to describe it, but have a few speculations. But anyway, when you were traveling for work, I happened to just pick up this DVD box set. Honestly, can't even remember where it came from, and popped it in and was completely captivated. And what it was Bishop Robert Barron's Catholicism series. And at the time he was Father Barron. But the truth and the goodness and the beauty in all its unity and integrity and radiance just poured forth from the screen. And I was just completely raptured. And, it was the catalyst that, brought me back to the beauty and the truth and the goodness of the Mass and of the faith. And so, that combined with, St. Faustina and the Divine Mercy, those were the two things that, you know, really brought me back to a love affair with our Lord. And so I have a great debt to Bishop Barron for helping me, come back to the faith. And I think that my story is not unique. I think he's touched thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or more lives.
Lots.
Yeah. So that being said, without further ado, we present to you our 50th episode, 1 year anniversary, and we got to celebrate it with Bishop St. Anthony the Abbot.
Pray for us.
And peace be with you. Enjoy the episode. Bishop Barron, you've commented and opined at great length about the nuns, as we call them, those who I don't identify with any religion or faith. And more specifically, the stat that about 50% of young people by their 20s have abandoned their faith. I was wondering, do you see it as a moment that jolts them away from the faith or more of a gradual process? And if it's the latter, when do you think they've really left, so to speak?
Yeah, every single study is showing they're leaving younger and younger. So we used to say they drift away by the late teens or into their 20s. Now it's early teens, even preteens. We're talking about 12 and 13-year-olds leaving the faith. So it's always a process, I suppose, but it's happening much earlier. I'm in the middle of confirmation season right now, and we confirm kids right in the middle of high school. So they're like 14, 15. And that's the age, or even a little bit younger, when they're pulling out. So I think we just got to be very, very attentive to this reality, and we have to know we're in for a fight, and the church can't be blasé about this and presume, everyone's going to keep coming to our institutions, they'll keep going through our processes and matriculating through our systems. We got to be aware a lot of kids are opting out earlier and earlier.
You know, I completely agree. I think one of the things that we've seen in our parish is that there's a tremendous effort for the really young kids, right? Like there's children's ministries and all kind of things. But what do you think, like, if you could put your finger on it from a local parish level, what do you think people can do to kind of stem that tide a little bit?
Well, you know, a lot of the kids are drawn to the confirmation programs because they, for all kinds of reasons, want to get confirmed. And I think that's a good opportunity. What I find these kids respond to, they love retreats, and I get that. They love an intense spiritual experience, which they probably often don't have. So a retreat that's structured the right way, that gives them that sense of community, the sense of connection to the mystical side of religion, I think that has a big impact on them. The second thing, though, I think it's more often missing is a chance to engage religious questions in a serious way. Every single survey I read says they have questions that never get answered. When they say, how come you left? Oh, I had so many questions, and there was never a good answer. I think we got to pick up our game here. I think we're pretty good at the spiritual side. I think we're very good even at the ministerial side. So we bring kids on, you know, pastoral experiences. We bring them out to care for the poor and to feed the hungry and so on. Great. I'm not against any of that. I'm for it. But I think we tend, in my opinion, to drop the ball when it comes to answering the tough questions that the kids have. And, you know, God knows we have the resources to do it in our intellectual tradition. But I think we're not sharing that adequately with the young people. So those are a couple of things. Retreats, the spiritual experience, but also getting their questions answered in a way they find satisfying.
Yeah, I work with a lot of different age groups, especially really little kids, 3 through 6. Yeah. And then teach the children's liturgy where, you know, we have them during a large portion of the liturgy of the word. And I've taken that advice and shared things like Aquinas with them and different philosophical concepts and the, you know, the proofs for God's existence and this and that. And I find that they are enamored by it and they're challenged by it. And I'm wondering, you know, that I've taken that advice, I've seen the results, but why do you think that, why do you think that's not happening more readily?
Well, here, we could have a whole, you know, week long conversation about this, but you know, my whole time in the church, so going back now to when I was a teenager, there's been a kind of anti-intellectualism that has taken hold of a lot of our formational programs. It's a sort of romanticization of religion, I think. And that's not altogether bad. I like things like, you know, the mystical and the prayerful and the experiential, the pastoral, all those good things. But there has been, I think, a sort of anti-intellectualism that, well, you know, that's not what's bothering the kids. And, oh, well, you know, that won't intrigue them. And I agree with you. I say au contraire, in my experience, I think kids are very interested in those questions. And they're telling us that's why we're leaving, because these questions aren't being answered. And may I say, in the meantime, very effective evangelists like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins are engaging the minds of young people, because I hear from them every day on my internet forums. Every day there's some younger, usually a young man, who is coming after me because they've been reading Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, who did not hug them into atheism. They argued them into atheism, you know? And so I think we've got to argue back and use the resources that we have. So I would fight against this kind of one-sided romanticization of religion and recover our own great intellectual tradition. That'll play a role for sure.
You know, you talk about arguing them into it. I think one of the things that I see as a challenge, not just for youth, but really for everybody in general, and you mentioned a little bit, you know, with social media, everybody gets, I love to call them social media muscles. But it seems like we've just in general lost the ability to have a well thought out argument in any forum. But I think almost especially in the religious forum.
Yeah, that was the whole point of my Facebook talk a few months ago when I was up there at Facebook headquarters. And I thought, look, before I even broach an explicitly religious topic, I did that at the talk at Google a few months later. But at Facebook, I thought, you know, just how to have an argument about religion that's not just shouting, that's not just emoting, that's not just sharing your anxieties and frustrations, but is actually an argument, namely presenting evidence, marshaling authorities, moving from premise to conclusion, acting in accord with what your reason is telling you. I mean, the standard moves within any type of argumentation. But man, is it hard to apply those to religion, because people get so emotional about religion. They get so reactive to it. So I agree with you. Training our own kids, our own people, in how to do that, how to think clearly about religion, is really a desideratum today.
We saw that Facebook Live, and I thought it was great. What was their body language like? Because I got to tell you, that's got to be a tough crowd for a bishop to speak to, is a bunch of 20-somethings in science land.
As I remember, and the crowd was drawn from some of the people there. I think some outsiders came in. I kind of forget how they organized the crowd, because we were really more interested in how it was going to go out to the wider Facebook world.
Right.
But there was indeed an audience there. No, they reacted, as I remember, positively. There was a Q&A afterwards that was not filmed, as I remember. They didn't show the Q&A. But it was good. It was lively, and it was respectful. So, no, I didn't find any really hostility there.
When do you think we, like, I'm a fellow bibliophile, so in our home where I should have food, I have books.
It's a problem. It's a problem. We have books growing out the ears.
But yeah. And so in the long tradition of literature, you can see these arguments develop, and yet in more modern times, somehow the students aren't being taught that. And so where do you see some sort of line of delineation where, like, it was taught to a certain point and now it's not? Like, where have we lost that, you know,
right after
means
the
to
council.
Argument?
Right after the council. So when I was going through school, I went to first grade in 1965, the year the council ended. So I was the first generation to get the immediate post-conciliar reaction. And, you know, I always say the council represented the cream of the crop of Catholic intellectualism mid-20th century, the people that gave us the council. Rahner and de Lubach and Balthasar and Danielu and Ratzinger and Wojtyła. And these are the leading lights of the time.
Sure.
And the Vatican II documents are very rich, patristic, biblical, even scholastic to a degree. But then, strangely, and I agree, it's a strange thing. In the wake of the council, in the way it was received, at least in our country, a great anti-intellectualism held sway. Now, I get it. Maybe a reaction, you know, people that got too much of the Baltimore Catechism kind of approach. They got too much of a, you know, deductive or rationalistic approach, I guess. Believe me, I never got that as a kid. I was, you know, rescued by God's grace when I discovered St. Thomas Aquinas as a young kid at Fenwick High School. But that was a, you know, strange sort of one-off thing. And I sort of ran with it, where I think most people gone over their head, I suppose. So it was a bad period. I think everyone agrees with that now. It was a bad period in Catholic formation and education. Here's the positive side. I think the new atheist thing in the early zeros was net a boon for the church, because I think it woke us up. It woke the church up to say, hey, we can't just slide through with this stuff. We're getting a severe intellectual challenge from our enemies. We can't just go running into the arms of the culture like we're two, you know, two lovers running across a field. You know, I think that was sort of the image after the council was, oh, the culture greeted and welcomed it. And, well, yeah, elements of it. But when the culture turns hostile to us, we got to be ready to take it on, you know. So what have you seen now in the zeros and then in the tens? You've seen a revival of Catholic intellectualism, I think. A revival certainly of apologetics. Look at all the apologetics, books and websites and so on. Look at Catholic evangelism, including the work you do, the work I do. I think in many ways that was a response to the great challenge that we received in the aughts and the tens. So that's a good thing. I'm glad to see that, but I want that to trickle down now into the general Catholic consciousness. And, you know, it's a matter of filling out the picture. It's not an either or. I love all the things that we emphasize in terms of the pastoral and the experiential and the mystical, but we got to balance it out with the intellectual too.
Yeah. I think it's just a big part of it is the use of media and technology to evangelize that was never there before. I mean, you know, there's people that listen to, I mean, you have millions of people that have listened to your shows, and I feel blessed that we have thousands that have listened to ours, and we're just a tiny little speck on a radar. But in my mind, it starts at home. I mean, Annie did a great job. She taught an apologetics class here in our living room, and people showed up, and we didn't have enough room for them. I mean, it's just, I think that's it. It's kind of that new, you know, evangelization thing, especially in the Easter season when you're talking about the Acts of the Apostles.
Mm. Well, and it's important you mention new evangelization, because John Paul II's you know, steady emphasis on that eventually trickled down. And that's the way it works. Ideas have consequences. They really do. And when they first appear, everyone goes, oh, well, yeah, it's a lot of abstract, you know, hoo-ha. But if ideas are emphasized sufficiently, and they're repeated, and that was, John Paul knew that. You kind of say it again and again and again and again. Eventually, it trickles down. And I think the new evangelization, that's what we're all doing, you know. Let's keep going. May our tribe increase, you know. Because we are right now losing the battle with young people. There's no question about that. We can't be blind to it. I'm the chair of the Bishop's Committee on Evangelization, and I've just made that our focus. And I said, look, brothers, we can't be naive about this or blind to it. We're losing the battle with young people. So it's time to mix it up.
Yeah. And speaking of a call to action, you know, in this Easter season, we hear from the Acts of the Apostles a lot. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit on not just only what we can learn from them, but what example do you specifically take as a successor of, you know, as a bishop of the apostles? And then what can the laity take away from their example and preaching the good news?
It's good. I think that's a great place to look. And I would encourage all Catholics, all Christians, to look long and hard at the Acts of the Apostles. And it's no accident, as you say, that in the Easter season, the church like pushes our faces into the Acts of the Apostles, because that's us. That's what they're saying. It's, okay, Jesus Christ risen from the dead. We got the message. Now, what do apostles do? Well, first of all, they're apostles. They're sent, apostelion, right? You've been posted like a letter. You've been sent on mission. So that's the first thing, is being a Christian is being a missionary, period. It's not sitting home cultivating your spiritual life, as important as that is. I spent a holy hour this morning in my chapel. I'm all in favor of cultivating your spiritual life, but that can't be enough. You're then sent on mission. You're an apostle. There's the first thing. Second thing is, I think, the enthusiasm of their style. This is a matter of life and death, and they knew it. This is what all of history and time and space hinges upon, and they knew it. Jesus Christ risen from the dead. This is not a bland message like, hey, I came up with a new spiritual insight today, like a poet. Well, I mean, great. I'm all in favor of spiritual insights, you know, but that ain't the New Testament. The New Testament is Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. The one that you killed, remember him? God raised him up. And I use that image of shaking you by the lapels or by the shoulders. That's the New Testament. And so that's the call of every Christian, is to go out with that kind of enthusiasm. Third thing I would say is look at the importance of speech in the Acts of the Apostles. Impassioned and reasoned speech. Think of Paul and the Areopagus. Think of all the great sermons of Peter and Paul. Going into the synagogues, explaining, hey, here's who Jesus is, and let me explain to you in light of the history of Israel, you know? How well do we know the great story? How confident are we at getting up and speaking it clearly, articulately, enthusiastically? Another insight from the Acts of the Apostles is expect opposition, right? So from the beginning,
just a little bit.
Yeah, look at, you know, Saul breathing murderous threats. Well, yeah, before he became Paul the Apostle, he was breathing murderous threats. Not that I'm getting murderous threats, but I mean, go on the internet any day of the
week.
They're
pretty hostile. I've seen
them. They're pretty hostile. I mean, the hostility toward religion. All right, buck up. Expect it. It's going to happen. Don't be afraid of it. Or don't react like, oh my, how dare you? No, of course people are going to be against you. They have always been against us, you know? So expect opposition. Those are a couple lessons I would call from the Acts of the Apostles. But I think you're right. It's a great place to look.
Yeah. And as one, I know you're short on time, so I want to just follow up with one last question. And it piggybacks on how you were talking about the enthusiasm. And one phrase I know you've sort of coined was the bland Catholicism, right? That a lot of people have. Yeah. And so I think from our work here, we've kind of seen the divorce of truth and from goodness and the divorce from beauty. And so truths can appear limp and goodness isn't necessarily as pleasing and beauty can be dull. And so I think one great place to reunite those is Word on Fire and all of the beautiful things that you've been able to produce, you know, over the last decade or plus. Yeah. And so Word on Fire has grown to the point where now it's becoming a movement, which I'm fully on board with, by the way. But I was wondering if you could speak, because I know you're really enthusiastic about that particularly. I was wondering if, you know, especially because we have so many listeners who tell me all the time and we get messages like, what can I do now? You know, and so I was wondering if maybe you could speak to the Word on Fire movement a little bit with a call to action.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Our hope is to watch a transformation from Word on Fire as a ministry, which has been for a long time, now to a movement, to a national, I hope even international mission. What's the great challenge of our time, at least in the West, is this challenge we've been talking about of the nuns, of those who are drifting into secularism. And I think it's crisis one. I think it's problem one in the church. So what do we do? Cardinal George, who was a mentor to me, used to say in the wake of, you know, the sex abuse scandals and all these trials, he'd say, where are the orders? Where are the orders? I'm looking for them because they always pop up at times of crisis. And so you think of whether it's the Benedictines or the Franciscans or the Dominicans or the Jesuits or the Cardinal's own order, the OMIs, the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, you know, that popped up after the French Revolution. It's often during these times of crisis that movements and orders emerge to address themselves to these problems. So at the risk of sounding grandiose, that's what I sort of have in mind with Word on Fire is, okay, this is the crisis of our time. How do we respond? And my idea, and again, it's kind of it's a prayer, it's a dream at this point, is to form an army of evangelizers. First among the laity, you know, so we have this strong internet presence. We're in the process right now of recording a number of talks, lectures, specialized courses in theology, spirituality, practical evangelism to form people in this work, how to make your lives all about evangelization. Our hope is that people will join the movement. They'll get access to these materials. They'll form first online communities. So, you know, you guys know about that very well, that now we have these tools to gather people, not just on the ground, but through the web. My hope is that these web-based communities will eventually sort of ground themselves in different parts of the country, form little communities or groups or societies. I envision eventually Word on Fire centers in the major cities, centers for instruction, evangelization, dialogue with the culture. When I'm dreaming really big, I start thinking about a religious order with priests and religious who are devoted, you know, their whole lives to this work. We're at the very early stages of it. We're just kind of starting to get it organized. I'm hoping to launch it formally in the fall. But we have these courses. I just recorded the 12 pretty lengthy lectures on the theology of Balthasar, which has been a big formative, influence for me. So anyway, it's getting going.
Don't worry, Annie. You'll watch them. There's no question.
Yeah, I've supported a lot of the salaries of Word on Fire people with all of my purchases.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you. So we'll see. I'm gonna keep praying for it, and we'll see what happens. What God's grace wants to do with it.
We definitely will. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you here. You've done such amazing work that I think has helped so many people, I mean, all around the globe, and touched a lot. And we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Well, God bless you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for your purpose. Okay.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Breadbox Media programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.